Well, good evening. Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and the views of our guests. And for the first hour this evening, our special guest is Nancy Levant, who we've had on many times before, and we always enjoy having her. Nancy, how are you tonight?
Fine, thank you, Dr. Stan. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
Oh, good.
And for our listeners out there, if you are interested in reading Nancy Levant's articles, you'll find them on newswithviews.com. That's newswithviews.com. She's a regular columnist there. Does a great job, and I do hope that you'll enjoy her letters. So go ahead. Why don't you tell us what we're going to be talking about tonight?
Well, in one of my last articles on News with Views, I talked about the title of the article was New World Order Consumer Slave. And the article was really just inspired by considering things such as in almost all careers now, even careers that don't require college educations, one has to be licensed or credentialed through the state in some way. And it seems to me that if you go to college and you pay enormous dollars to become educated, as soon as you find a job, that job then requires you to spend additional money, to provide additional money to your states, usually through further credentialing and licensure. And so it seems to me that we have to pay vast amounts of money to go to school, school loans, and then we get a job, and then we have to continue constantly pouring in these dollars to the state to maintain some type of credentialing. And then when you add on top of that things such as vehicle licensure, mandatory insurance policies, outrageous heating costs, or just energy usage costs, gasoline costs, I think that most Americans realize that their money is simply not going very far anymore. I think that even upper middle class people are struggling.
Well, I think, of course, Nancy, what you're really pointing out is that whatever you have, simply a legislature and a bureaucracy that seems to think that they can regulate everything. Somebody once said that when it becomes the function of government to keep all men from their folly, then we will have a race of fools. And what is happening today is the people sit around in the legislature thinking about things that they could do. I know here in California, I have a medical license. And one of the things they decided that everybody who is going to have a medical license has to spend 12 hours learning about the treatment of the care of pain and death and dying. They were going to have to take a series of courses on that. And all across the state, the physicians who've been taking care of patients who are dying for years now have to go to a course and learn how to do it. And, of course, and I had to take these courses to maintain my license. They said, talk to the family. Now, there's something very important. Talk to the family. Try to establish a relationship with the family. See how the family feels about the person who's dying. I mean, am I going to spend hours learning how to talk to the family and get their impression about the person who's dying? I mean, so ridiculous, but somebody had passed legislation, and now we had to obey that legislation.
And yes, and see, a part of this, too, once you get involved with these credentialing outfits, you will find that there are also reporting mechanisms in place. Even if you babysit for children in my state, which is the state of Michigan, you have to have licensure.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, Dr. Stan, our guest this evening is Nancy Levant, and we're just talking about the fact that everything you have to have a license. Nancy does the chair that looks after children, but you have to have a license before you can look after children. Well, most women know how to look after children, but they're going to regulate, how many children you can have there, and all sorts of rules and that must just drive you quite bananas. All the rules and regulations they have.
That's right. Even if you babysit for children in your home, you have to be licensed in the state of Michigan. It's absolutely absurd. And it's not only that you have to be licensed, then you have to maintain your licensure with continuing education. This is this lifelong learning garbage that came down the pike with our current president. And, it seemed like a nice little cliche when it first came out. But now we realize that what lifelong learning is lifelong paying into the coffers of the government. These are state licenses, state credentialing outfits, and it keeps taking and siphoning our money. And this is what lifelong learning is really about.
And then, of course, many times they would use these various programs to indoctrinate you with things that I don't really think are really very valid. I know this is the way it is with medicine today. I mean, some of the courses we take are really very good. And some of them are so ridiculous, you sort of wonder, what am I doing here?
Exactly, and why am I forced to pay for it? And the other thing that's very interesting about a lot of these licenses and these certificates that we are now required to get in every field is that then you will find that there is, like, reporting mechanisms in place. For instance, most schools now have partnered with the mental health industry. We've talked about this. We know about this. And advocates from these mental health complexes go into the schools, and they start doing questionnaires with kids. And even teachers who do assessments with kids are now required to have a teacher assessment, an actual assessment with the child, and then they want questionnaires given to parents. And then all of this information is collected and it is for use in the mental health complex. And so not only are we forced to pay for all of this over and over and over again to get our credentials updated every 2 years or whatever that it happens to be for a specific credential, but then, oftentimes, we're often required to report our findings or our assessments or whatever to specific agencies or partnerships.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Nancy and Levant, and she's simply talking about all the rules and regulations that even that she is looking after children has to put up with, and certainly they're checking on you all the time, and you have to take continuing educational courses to maintain your license, because you have to have a license to look after children, and then there's all sort of reporting mechanisms, and pick up the story, Nancy.
Well, and, we ask ourselves, why is this happening? If you're a mechanic, you have to have a license. You go to school, you go to a vocational school, and you learn how to become some type of a craftsman, and then you have to get a license. You have to get a certification, all of this stuff. Well, what's interesting to me about all of these new requirements is that at the same time, we have all of these new regional governing bodies being set into place. And I think what is happening is that what we are seeing is these control mechanisms being set into place all across the country to control the quote-unquote workforces. Everyone is literally being trained to be on the same page and on the same control mechanisms. There is no room for creativity for teachers. Teachers can't be creative. They are given canned curriculums. Teachers actually don't teach anymore. Children are taught in consensus groups in the classroom. This is why all children are now tabled together in about groups, usually about groups of six, sometimes eight. And teachers kind of sit back in the corner of the classroom now rather than up in front of the children. And the children actually get into these groups where they literally teach themselves while the teacher sits back and documents how children are functioning in these consensus groups. Now, if a child is a highly individual child, a highly creative child, and they don't do well in these group consensus scenarios, these children are then removed from the classroom and they go into what is called an IEP, which is an individual education plan. And this is, many parents know what I'm talking about this because this is standard procedure all over America in the public school system now. If your child is put into an IEP, an individual education plan, that child literally leaves the classroom, goes with another teacher, goes into another special group, and that child is basically re-socialized so that they can be a good group or consensus citizen. The groups that children are put into now in schools have nothing to do with intellectual ability or intellectual need. They are social behavioral modification groups. And this is what is happening in the public schools, while at the same time, the level of education and the level of information that is given to students and the quality of the materials that are provided to students has dropped and dropped and dropped. See, the bottom line, through all of these credentialing mechanisms, through the consensus groups in the schools, is that we are being re-engineered as citizens.
Well, of course, we are now. We're more considered to be social capital. And this whole idea is that we are really creatures of the state. There really is an elite group who thinks that they know what's best for us and for our children.
Absolutely.
And that is what this is, whole idea is about. It is not about education. I mean, if it was about education, they're doing a rotten job. I mean, our children, when they graduate from high school, and they are tested competitively with children from other societies, our kids are down at the bottom as far as reading and writing and arithmetic. They have a tremendous self-esteem. They really think that they're pretty good. But the truth of the matter is we've systematically dumbed down our children and taken away their ability to be creative. And this is going to be a terrible problem, you know, in a relatively few years.
Well, and it's not only the children. It's also the adults in the workforce. And they have done this very same thing through these credentialing outfits and these licensing requirements. Basically, when you go and you are getting your continuing education credits for whatever credential you're trying to maintain or license you're trying to maintain, everyone across the United States is being fed exactly the same material. This is what we want you to do as a professional person or as an adult in the workplace. This is how you're going to do your job, and this is what you're going to do. And we are being, all individuality is literally being educated right out of us. And this is what has been dubbed lifelong learning. We can't keep our jobs anymore. We can't even have jobs anymore unless we go through this ongoing credentialing process. And it's absolutely despicable.
You know, the same thing, of course, is true with contractors. You want to be a contractor, you have to have a contracting license. Now, it doesn't mean that you can't do the job if you don't have a license. It just means that now you become a lawbreaker, a criminal. If I were to contract with somebody who didn't have a license, that man could come under criminal penalties because he signed a contract with me to do a job, which we both agreed to, and he would do a good job on. But you see, if he doesn't have that license, somehow he can't do a good job. And the whole idea is it's all done because the state is there to look after us, common folks, because we're incapable of looking after ourselves.
Well, and the state is telling us how we're going to do literally everything, how we're going to operate as an employee, how we are going to teach children, how we are going to act in the classroom. You can't be who you are anymore. You can't be an individual. Everything is all about now community, likeness, sameness, consensus, and uniformity. And I'm sorry, but this just goes against the grain of everything that the human creature is. It robs us of everything. It robs us of our potential. That's the greatest damage. When we are told exactly what we have to do on every single job, then your creative fire is literally snubbed out. You are nothing but a robot.
And I think what people don't understand is that this is not happening by accident.
No.
There is an elitist plan to do exactly that sort of thing.
Yes.
And you go back and you read what these people were talking about. There's this wonderful quotation from the it goes into some of the things that the Rockefeller Foundation was talking about many years ago. In fact, it was in August of 1912 when Frederick Gates, who was the head of the Rockefeller General Educational Board, said in something called The World's Work, that in our dream we have limited resources and the rural people yield themselves with perfect docility to our molding hands. And this is the sort of thing that's going on. Same things are going on within our churches today. Everything is uniformity in our churches today as they change the music and the message of our church. And then we wonder why we have a church today where nobody speaks out against torture, because after all, if the government authorized it, Romans 13 says we've got to go along with it. God must approve it. If our leaders are doing it, it's got to be right. And we should be very concerned, because what we're doing is moving away from freedom, which was the hallmark of America, towards a fascist society where everything is regulated from the cradle to the grave.
Well, it's called communism, but it's a hybrid communism. It's a very interesting type of communism, frankly, because it is now to the point where it is becoming not only political and cultural and educational control, there's also technological control involved. There's technological control involved, excuse me, with the subdermal chipping, with the spying technologies that are now everywhere in the United States, and the panoptical technologies of being watched constantly wherever we are, of our license plates having RFID technology inside of them, so that every time we go by a street corner or every time we go through a traffic light, our license plates are actually read and can be tracked.
Oh, of course. One of the greatest things is going to be these new driver's licenses. And, of course, they will embed within that driver's licenses an RFID chip that will be capable of being monitored. So they will know where you are. They're doing the same thing with our passports, the new passports.
Well, and with our automobiles.
Right.
All new automobiles have global positioning systems inside of them.
And, of course, the same thing with our cell phones. We think that the cell phone gives us freedom. Actually, it's a means by which we can be tracked whether it is on or off. They can track exactly where you are with a cell phone. Why would they insist on putting that technology in? And if it weren't that there are certain people who really want to regulate and control every human being, and not only this country, but very, very soon throughout the world. In fact, I saw a picture just today. It showed an African native with his typical attire on, something sort of like a sarong around him, with a big smile on his face and a cell phone in his hand, obviously talking out to somebody on the cell phone. And once they have the cell phones in everybody's hands, then we can track every single individual by our satellites, which were never devised to track the communists, because we were creating the communists and financing the communists. They were devised to track us. And, of course, the whole threat of communism was as phony as a $3 bill. We had to have an enemy to rally the people behind government to protect us from the wicked communists. Well, now, of course, it's the wicked Islamic terrorists and Osama bin Laden, who's over there in a cave, plotting on how he's going to take away our freedom.
Well, yeah, it's all a guise. It's all a dialectical process. We've talked about this process before. It's all dressed up. I actually wrote a recent article called "Pretty Fascist Communism." It's all dressed up in this prettiness, like the homeowner association communities, where everything is uniform, everything is pretty. But we have no control. We can't even control what colors we want to paint our buildings or our garage doors.
Of course, people voluntarily give up their freedom because, after all, it's such a beautiful community. Without realizing, when you go to this beautiful community, you lose your individuality, you lose your freedom. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. We'll take your call when we get back. Well, Nancy, pick the story up there.
Well, you know, we simply have to ask ourselves. We have to ask ourselves what is happening to us in this country. I think almost every American has a sense of unease or dis-ease. We feel that things are off. We feel uncomfortable. We realize that we can't save anymore. We're in tremendous debt. And this was also very, very planned. I remember that my first house that I owned was a three-bedroom, one-and-a-half-bath brick ranch that cost $19,000. And the same house, very much the same house like I live in now, that house is now $150,000. And it's just a very strange, strange thing that has happened in this country. And I think people realize that something is terribly wrong. Well, what is wrong primarily is that we have a new government being implanted right beneath our noses, right beneath our noses. But it's just too difficult for the American people to imagine or to comprehend that this country is being overtaken by a bloodless revolution. But that is exactly what is happening. And it's happening by enslaving the American public in absolutely absurd debt that they can never recover from. And at the same time, the American jobs are being taken offshore. And so our pay rates are going down, down, down into the service industry sector. And yet all of this technology has come into our lives that we have all run out to purchase. But what that technology does is it tracks us. It has the ability to know where we are, to know what we buy, to look at our finances, to look at our medical conditions. And we have to understand, number one, we are paying for all of this tragedy in our country. We're doing it through a very corrupt tax system and a very illegal tax system. And we are also doing it through these mandatory licenses and credentials that we're now required to pay to keep our jobs, to keep our jobs, even if we've gone to universities to achieve degrees to have these jobs. And it is also just everywhere inside of our school system and our medical system, and it's actually now into our church system. We're simply in grave danger. We're in grave danger.
And people don't really understand why these things are happening. They're not happening by accident. They're happening by intent. There really are people out there who have a different view of what society should be. There really are people out there who hate America, who hate this idea of limited government where people can be free. And their plan is, of course, to, within the framework of what we have here, little bit by little bit, replace our freedom with tyranny. But, of course, it happens so slowly the average individual doesn't know. And what they really want is everything to be controlled by a massive bureaucracy. And it grows just a little every year.
But that massive bureaucracy also has been implanted to steal our wealth. We keep having to pay more and more for everything and more for licenses and more for credentials and more for university
education.
Hold
that thought. We'll be right back here, Nancy. Just have to bring our stations on. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Nancy Levant. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And Nancy is saying that, certainly there is ever-increasing regulation and control of our lives. We have to pay more and more for our licenses. And there are more and more regulations. And there are more and more inspections. And after all, you've got these bureaucrats out there. They've got to do something. And as you expand the bureaucracy, they've just got to come around and check on you more because you might be doing something wrong. And believe me, they will come in and they have to find something. Otherwise, it doesn't appear that they're doing their job. And then, of course, we see people becoming increasingly resentful and frightened of government. And as someone once said, when the government fears the people, there is freedom. but when the people fear the government, there is tyranny. And I would simply ask you, how do you feel when you get an unsolicited letter from the IRS? Do you feel happy to know that they are in, want to know about you and perhaps give you some money or give you some kind of advice? Or do you tremble in fear that you might have done something wrong? Or you might not have done anything wrong, but they're going to come after you anyway.
Well, that's absolutely true. I mean, I think that everyone at this point really is in fear of a great many things. I think we are afraid to get sick. I think we are afraid of our medical care system. I think we're afraid of our educational system. I think that, you know, jobs have become very interesting in the United States because I think we know for a fact that the elite groups or the aristocrats in the United States have literally overtaken every good-paying job in this country. And it's not based upon they're brilliant or they've worked their way up the ladder. It's based on appointments. Anymore, you almost have to be invited to have a job. It's just everything has changed so radically, so radically.
And but people, Nancy, they do not understand because it's happened so slowly that even though it's been progressive, it's worse every year. And they look around and they say, what happened to the America I was brought up in? What happened to this idea where men could be free and men could accomplish whatever they wanted to, you know, dependent upon how hard they worked?
Well, you know, we've come so far in this new government that is been implanted in this country that really only people who are probably 50 and up understand anymore, remember what it was like when it was different.
Amen.
When you could apprentice and with someone and you could become brilliant with a career and you didn't have to have either a PhD or you know, be an elitist to begin with. You could work your way up.
So much of the hard-earned money that you get and give it to the government so that they can fight their wars throughout the world, so they can give it in foreign aid, so they can buy the politicians so that they will oppress us. Well, let's go to Frank, who's calling from West Virginia. Hi, Frank. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm doing fine. I appreciate this show. Great topic. This is one that's not addressed all that often, and certainly not in this detail. I'm a preacher as well as a martial artist. Some people think that's a strange combination. It just happens to be how it is. Practiced and actually taught martial arts for just over 25 years and preached for 20-plus. That said, I still run into more people all the time that want to know my credentials. Now, it's weird. It doesn't matter. And unless somebody has the patience to sit and actually under my teaching for a time, they want to know, you know, where you've been ordained, Bible college, and all these different, if you've been certified. I'll tell you how many people that I have actually held ceremonies for marriage over the past 5 years. Zero. And you know what's scaring them away? It's the fact that I am unregistered with the state, and I do not believe in marriage licenses, which goes back to the same topic. Now, there is a certificate I have. There's, you know, place for witnesses on there, all legal. It's just one of those things that I'm running into more and more. Closet full of belts, again, at the martial arts. I do not wear them. They disgust me. It's a representation of arrogance. And to at least a lot of people, I know a lot of people that wear them with humility, but the black belt, I mean, good grief, it's been, I don't know how long since I've actually worn one. I think people ought to look at the qualifications. I was wondering if you, ma'am, have encountered many ministers, preachers of different sorts that are not registered.
Have you run into those, Nancy?
Well, no, and I don't even know exactly what that means.
I mean, but basically, of course, a minister actually has to have an ordination, and most ministers have to have a license, don't they, to perform marriages, right?
I suppose they probably do, but, you know, look at that. Why would one have to have a license to be married? I have always questioned that.
Okay, hold on, we'll be right back. Thank you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and Frank is just calling in. He's a minister, but he doesn't have a license to marry people. He doesn't believe that as a minister of God, he should have to have one. Have any other points you want to make before we let you go, Frank?
Oh, that's about it, but you did ask a couple of very good questions.
All right.
And I don't have anything against ordination. I've been ordained. The fact is the state has no business when in regards to things of matters of God. If they want to recognize a marriage, I don't see any problem with recognizing somebody's unity in marriage. The problem is that they've taken the place of God's role. And so that there's so many people now that do not recognize marriage without that particular marriage to the state as well.
And I think that the big problem is that they get married by the state rather than by God. And when you, of course, pledge, you know, it'll be with you until death do us part, you're not making that pledge to your partner. You're making that pledge to God. And that's what it should be. It is God that unites men together, men and women together, certainly
well,
not a government.
I think another important point to make with a marriage license is we must always remember that all dogs in the United States are also required to be licensed.
Good point. Okay, thanks so much, Frank.
Thank you very much.
Okay. And, of course, here and where I am, of course, they have to be spayed as well. In other words, of course, every dog or any animal, unless you have a license to breed, has to be spayed. In our community, we have such a wonderful progressive community, and we're so concerned about the animals.
Well, it's absolutely absurd. When you think about it, you know, what is the license for? Well, what it does is it tells the state something about you. It tells where you were born. It tells how old you are. It tells who you are married to, who you are hooked up with. And it simply is it's another massive, massive invasion. Look at the process now when a child is born. That child has a social security number before you walk out of the door. And, you know, you don't have to have, I don't even think you have to have one in this country, but they don't tell you that. You know, all babies fill out, or parents fill out, the Social Security application, you know, while the mother's sitting there recovering from just giving birth.
Well, that, of course, was part of the Office for Homeland Security legislation. That's how we were going to fight the wicked Osama bin Laden. Every child was going to have a Social Security number in the hospital.
Yes,
and, of course, I'm sure Osama bin Laden is sitting in his cave quaking at the thought of how efficient we're becoming.
Well, you know, what all of these things round up to, period, is tracking capabilities.
You're absolutely right.
That's what it's for.
And we're going to be back in just a moment with Nancy Levant. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We're having a good time again with Nancy Levant, as we always do. And certainly, if you'd like to call us, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But Nancy's written a fascinating book, which, Nancy, would you like to tell them about the book, where they can get it, and, of course, about your webpage?
All righty. You can find my books and information about my book at newswithviews.com. There's many other websites, actually. If you just do a Google search with my name, you can find my book and articles, so on and so forth.
Zybach, we actually carry your book here.
We've
put out a fair number of them. Give us the title of the book.
The book is called The Cultural Devastation of American Women.
And, of course, the cultural devastation of American women, and basically it just talks about what's happened as far as women are concerned and how they're sort of losing their vision, they're losing their womanhood, they're in many respects losing the very gifts that God has given them to nurture and cherish, and somehow they feel that there are other things far more important. Would that be a fair appraisal of the book?
Yes, I think that the book is really about what the implementation of a new type of government over the decades has done specifically to women. There has been an effect on men as well, and I may write that book one day, but particularly for women and the kind of mandatory effects of the so-called women's liberation movement. You know, in this country, women are liberated women. We're very, very lucky women here. But through the propaganda of the women's movement, liberation really became equated with abortion rights, with the right to be disinterested mothers, to be disinterested wives, to be a workforce. I think that the move in the global governance movement is to basically, number one, get control of children, and by doing so, getting women out of the home, getting them into the workforce, making them into tax-creating entities, taxable entities, I should say, and then at the same time, drawing their children into earlier and earlier and earlier education, because women are now working, most women are now working, and when our children were drawn into earlier and earlier education, even from infancy, which is very typical now, then these school systems can come in and start creating this new citizen, this new global citizen, which is not a free citizen. This new citizen is a laborer, basically.
In fact, it's wonderful. I think it's in Bertrand Russell's book, The Impact of Science on Society. It's either page 50 or 53. Anyway, if anybody would like the pages, they're in our syllabus on the Hidden Agenda, or we'll even send them to you because we got permission for the people who hold the copyright. And Bertrand Russell, who's one of the elitists, who really looks down upon us common folks, he said by diet, injections, and injunctions, we will be able to mold the minds and thoughts of the child so that they will never have a thought of not of doing anything contrary to what their schoolmaster had taught them.
That's exactly right.
But that's exactly what this is all about. They know exactly what they're doing.
Oh, yes.
But I sometimes wonder what's in the diet and what's in the injections and what's in the injunctions. But nobody ever asked that. The average individual could never believe that they would be poisoning our children, using medications on our children to alter their mental perspective, their intelligence, and make them more obedient.
Well, and this is a very important point in my book. You know, when you change the basic biological functions of womanhood by making, you know, abortion a right of freedom, and by putting women, almost in adult women, almost in complete and perfect numbers into the workforce, then children basically become the responsibility of the state. And this is what we have seen happen. This is why education has literally gone to hell in the United States, and why women at the same time have become a far more really unhappier people. And I think that this is absolutely a truthful statement. I think that women have become very overburdened by full-time jobs and then by trying to also raise children and deal with homes. Marriages have absolutely fallen apart for many, many reasons. But I think many, many women are terribly unhappy. I think they don't exactly know why, because they have been so manipulated culturally. It's like a woman doesn't have a good path anymore. If you go and become a career woman, you feel guilty about your family, and it's specifically your children. If you stay home, you feel like a financial burden, and you feel that the culture looks down on you and pities you because of your loathsome condition as a housewife. And I think women are kind of in a situation now of, you know, it's just lose-lose, no matter which way you go.
But, you know, one time, Nancy, a man, he didn't even have to be a professional man or anything, but a man could make a living and provide for his wife and his family. And they could buy a house, and he didn't have to make a lot of money because things were not as expensive. And then the government stepped in. Oh, they're here to help us, you know. And what they've done is created an artificial prosperity, run up the cost of everything. And now it's very difficult for a man, even, you know, working very, very hard to make enough to support his wife and his family. And
well,
so that's why the wife has to go to work. And they've encouraged her to.
Well, and if a marriage falls apart and a man is court-ordered to pay child support on one child or two children or even three children, that man is financially destroyed. during his primary working years. We know this for a fact. We know this for a fact. And the single mother's life is absolutely horrible because she's gone all the time doing one or two jobs while her children are simply so they're absolutely vulnerable to the culture at that point.
Well, I think, you know, I'm sure you know very well that this whole idea of getting the children into school, preschool, in other words, whether 3 or 4 or even 2 years of age, where they can begin to destroy their belief in God and destroy their belief in family and destroy their belief in country. And these children are being indoctrinated in all of these godless concepts. They're indoctrinating them that homosexuality is perfectly normal. And in kindergarten across America today, they're trying to destroy the very moral foundation of this society, and they know exactly what they're doing. And who are they? Why, they're the people associated with the great tax-exempt foundations who funded Kinsey's corrupt scientific work. And I'm specifically referring to the Rockefeller Foundation, and you can read the Reese Committee reports. It's up on the Internet, or get the book we carry called Foundations, Their Power and Influence.
You're referring to the shadow government,
right,
the actual government of the United States of America, which is the Council on Foreign Relations.
Right.
Oh, well, Chris, that's absolutely what it is.
Well, of course, the CFR is known. Well, that's the Carnegie, Rockefeller, and Ford, CFRs, Carnegie, Ford, and Rockefeller, the Council on Foreign Relations. So, and you're absolutely right. And, of course, it is simply one of the apparent manifestations of this shadow government. Our telephone number, again, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And Nancy is referring to the fact there really is a shadow government. They do have an agenda. They are an elitist group who believes that they have the right to rule us. They hate the Constitution and these ideas of individual freedom, and little by little...
They don't like freedom for the common man.
Right.
For the commoner. They like freedom for themselves, but not for the commoner.
Right. Well, I think it's so important people understand this is not imaginary. It's really very, very real. They have membership lists. They'll send you their membership list. You can see how their people are always in the various commissions or their various committees. They're always the ones who get elected to key positions in government.
And people must understand that most of the big media entities in the world are members of the Council on Foreign Relations.
You're absolutely right.
The biggest news broadcasters, for instance, the owners of the biggest media corporations in the world are members of the Council on Foreign Relations. So we must realize that what television tells us is directly in line with the political missions and the economic missions of the Council on Foreign Relations. This is a fact.
You're absolutely right. Well, let's go to Ray. Is this Ray or is this Chris? Hello?
Yes.
Yes, is this Ray or Chris?
Ray.
Okay, Ray, did you have a question or comment?
Yes. I've been out of the classroom for quite a few years. My grandson, I was in public school. My grandson, however, is in kindergarten. It is a private school, religious-based. However, as a mathematics teacher, I found that I thought testing and so forth was very important to hire teachers. I've seen where teachers would got credentials or had their education in other states where I was brought up and so forth. And then in the large district I taught in, the teachers were tested, and I agreed to that. And I happened to score very high on a test when I entered there. I had later teachers in my mathematics department where I taught who basically, I don't know how they ever got there with the education they had from elsewhere. I think testing and so forth is important.
All right. How would you respond to that, Nancy?
Are you saying testing for teachers or testing for students?
Testing for the teachers.
Yes, I think it's important. However, teachers are being very... What do I want to say? They're being mistrained in universities now. Teachers are being trained not so much to teach as they are being trained to change the social conditions of children and also of families.
Well, that may be true, but the thing is, I was a mathematics teacher, and that's very specific as far as that goes.
I don't think anybody would disagree that the school board should have the right, of course, to actually make sure that their teachers are doing a good job.
Yes.
It is simply when these tests will come down from the federal government, and what are they going to be looking for? They're not going to be looking for whether or not you can teach mathematics. It's what's your attitude towards global warming? What's your attitude towards world government? What's your attitude towards America? And
well,
this
I would
is what
agree
they're
with
doing
that.
Is changing the attitude of our people and our teachers towards doing away with individual freedom and bringing about this world government.
Well, I agree with that without any question. But I'm talking specifically about a subject like I taught.
I think you're absolutely right. I think
but it should be your
school district that's doing this, not coming down from the national level, because if it's coming down from the national level, it won't deal with mathematics.
Well, that's why my grandson is in a private school also now.
I think that's a very smart move
on your
part.
I know what goes on in the social studies classes, even when I was there quite a few years ago. That it's not a good thing, in my opinion.
You're absolutely right.
You're right, yes.
But then at a certain point where I later went into an administrative position and into an advance to something else, I held a certain job. But then all of a sudden the school district was interested in having what they called affirmative action and getting more women involved. And then they test a lot of us, a great number of us. We were replaced by women and who we had to appear before a board where they had some woman from the community or whatever, and I don't know what they were looking for, but I know a lot of women ended up replacing fellows who had been in those positions for years.
Well, see, you are an older schooled American. That's what was being replaced.
I know. I was raised during the Depression years.
Exactly. And it's people like you and me and older Americans that they have lost their positions as teachers because they want this new breed trained teacher in the classroom. And they are actually trained in socialism. That is their teaching strategy.
And I'll tell you what, Ray, they're certainly not doing a very good job in teaching
they're
mathematics.
They're social reengineers.
They have this progressive type of education
yes.
where, you know, they don't teach the kids the mathematic tables anymore. That's old-fashioned.
I know.
And the whole thing has failed.
Myself. I didn't go for what they called the new mathematics.
And it was basically an intentional effort to dumb down our kids. They did a great job. Hey, we got to let you go, but I think you hang in there. What we need to do is get back to the way it was when you were teaching.
Well, I wish they would.
God bless. Bye-bye. Let's go to Chris calling from Idaho. Hi, Chris. You have a question for our guest?
Yeah, I got a comment or two, and good evening, Dr. Stan. I've been a contractor here in Idaho and came from Washington. And just recently, Idaho had us get insurance. And I figured it was kind of a joke, and so I went and got the insurance because I have to have insurance to maintain my license. So I went to the insurance agent, and I said, hey, since I got to have insurance, I says, well, now you can start looking at my work. You can start questioning who I did work for and critique it and da-da-da. I says, or you just blindly go out there and insure anybody for any reason, just as long as they've got the money. He says, well, that's really not built into the system. We can't afford to do that. And I said, so what is the insurance doing? What's the reason for it? You won't even come and look at my work? You're insuring somebody you don't even know? And I said, you don't have that built into the system? It's the same thing that goes on in Washington State. You can become a contractor, and all you have to have, Dr. Stan, is a license, a bonding, and insurance. It has nothing to do with competency. There are more incompetent contractors in the state of Washington, because I can show you the court docket, and it's loaded with lawsuits. But they've got bonding. They've got insurance, and they've got licenses. But does that protect the public? Absolutely no.
Nancy, what are your thoughts about what Chris is
saying? No, it's not about, the licenses are not about protecting the public. The licenses are about filling government coffers with money, with
exactly.
our money.
That's my
that's
point.
That's all it's about.
It has nothing to do with nothing
that's right.
other than money. It's just about money.
Chris, we live in a world gone mad. There's just a few of us are still saying, God bless you, and thanks so much for your call. I agree with you totally. Let's go to Ed calling from New York. Hi, Ed. How are you doing?
Hello, Dr. Stan. This is a very interesting subject. It's been on my mind for a long time. Anyway, my main concern is what's happening in the churches, because I think the same thing that's happening in our society is also happening in the church, where there's a need to conform to what is considered to be ideal.
I think you're absolutely right, and I share your concern about that. Nancy, what are your thoughts?
I agree 100%.
You got 1,000% support for you, and I think that we have to be concerned. And where is the outcry from the churches today about what's going on? About the war, about torture, about the progressive breakdown of the morality of our nation, about the progressive breakdown of the morality of our government. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, Ed, is there anything else you'd like to cover?
Well, I was praying a while ago, and I was getting all this information, requesting help, you know, in political areas and so forth. And I prayed about it, and the Lord said, you can't change society until you change hearts.
You're absolutely right.
And so I started to focus more on the spiritual than on the political.
But you see, we have sometimes to tell people about what's going on politically to get them to realize there's a problem. Many people are not going to be looking for the Lord, and little they know that this is going to affect them. It's the old adage, you know, there were no atheists in foxholes. Well, we're all in a foxhole, only most people don't realize it. Nancy, how would you respond to Ed? Ed feels that really he should be spending more time in prayer than in action.
Well, I agree, but we have to understand, too, that part of the mission of a one-world government is to destroy the primary religions, and, of course, specifically Christianity, because Christianity basically holds the foundation beneath sovereignty and freedom for people. And that is why Christianity is being undermined. That is why the Department of Homeland Security now has an executive order that gives it control over the faith-based churches. The government is now actually giving money to churches in order to forward this one-world agenda. And that is why churches have become more like political activists than places to go and worship Jesus Christ. It's a terrible thing. Yes, in many ways, I agree with what your caller said, that we need to get out of this mess in our hearts and get back to our beliefs. But at the same time, our beliefs require that truth is spoken, and that truth is that the people have the truth. You know, one of the most amazing things about our religion and our beliefs is that God gave us free will. That is exactly what is being taken away from us.
Amen.
Is our free will.
Hey, let's have a parting
and we
thought
have
before
to fight
we
for that.
Go. Eddie, have a parting thought? We got to let you go.
Well, I was just, I didn't want to be misunderstood. I do believe you have to understand what's going on in the world. My view was that the focus should be on having people come to know the Lord in the truth that he wants us to have,
so that we are able
to deal with this.
I agree with you totally, and I hope we can have that effect. Good night. And this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and Ed was calling from New York, and he said that he thought that the most important thing we could do is to change people's hearts and bring them into a personal relationship with our Lord. And, well, I really want you to know that's what I hope the purpose of my programs are. Yes, I'm going to give you a lot of bad news. Yes, I'm going to tell you about a lot of evil things. I'm going to tell you a lot of history. But I hope that some people are going to realize what we're up against and realize that there's no way we're going to be able to solve this on our own. We're going to have to turn to the Lord. And once you have a personal relationship with the Lord, I hope you'll be called to, you know, be involved with educating others and bringing them to a realization. I'm firmly convinced if we do not have a great revival, then the America we know and love will cease to be. Nancy, we're out of time. God bless you. Thank you so much for being with us. It's always a pleasure. And
my pleasure.
And we'll look forward. I hope we can get you back again in a week or so.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Good night. And God bless you.
Bye-bye.
Okay, that's Nancy Levant, one of our favorite guests. And we do carry her book, The Destruction of the American Woman. That's The Destruction of the American Woman. So give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927 if you'd like to get a copy of that. And, of course, if you'd like to get all the other material we have all sorts of books. We'll explain to you what is going on in America today. One of the best books we have was written about Hitler's Germany and the church, the Christian church. It's called Hitler's Cross. It's written by Dr. Erwin Lutzer. And as you read what happened in Hitler's Germany as far as the German church, and you see what's going on today, it's like deja vu all over again. So that's Hitler's Cross by Dr. Erwin Lutzer. And then, of course, we have so many books there that will begin to introduce you to the other dimension, because this is, truly is a spiritual battle. There is another dimension. There is a supernatural dimension out there. In fact, we carry a book on UFOs. I think it's not alien interference or not alien intervention. I don't think it's quite, I think it's alien intervention. Anyway, if you're interested in getting it, why, it will take you into the whole UFO phenomenon. What is that? They're simply demonic beings out there. There really are demonic beings. There really are people who can access the other dimension. You certainly would want to get the book we carry called The Beautiful Side of Evil by Joanna Michelson, or our four-tape set on the supernatural, my interviews with Joanna Michelson and, of course, Craig Heimberg, when we're talking about Aleister Crowley. And then we have a four-tape set on Aleister Crowley. He was a Satanist. He was the leading Satanist here, and, of course, he was the inspiration for men like Charles Manson. And, of course, the roadside strangler, whatever, Richard Ramirez, whatever his title was. But there are all sorts of similar organizations in our society today. You need to get the videos. They sold their souls for rock and roll. They sold their souls for rock and roll, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version of that. And you need to get the video, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. We'll take you into the secret societies, the secret occult societies that were here at the time when America was founded, and this conflict between the evil and the good that has been here since the inception of our country. At one time, Christianity was the dominant force in America. It is no longer the case. Oh, we have a Christianity, but it's not the Christianity that was preached, you know, in the 17th and 18th and the 19th century. This is a new form of Christianity, the feel-good Christianity, a Christ without a cross. Certainly the idea that we could have a God that would never judge anybody. There is no judgment for sin. We've changed the message and the music of the churches all across America. Let me just suggest you go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. You can listen to our programs there. Actually, 3 hours a day and then 2 hours a day on the other networks. We do hope many of you seriously consider joining the Radio Liberty family and helping us as we reach out 5 hours every day across America, trying to make people understand we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests. And, well, right now, of course, we have on the line Dr. John Cannell from the Vitamin D Council. And many of you are saying, Vitamin D Council, what's this all about? Well, we're going to change gears here. I want to tell you about something that is so vitally important, and the tragedy is that most physicians really don't understand the importance of vitamin D. And so certainly Dr. Cannell, who has been working with this subject for some time, and you really need to get onto his email list so that you can get his regular releases on some of the amazing things we're learning about vitamin D, and how this is going to be so important for you, especially we hear all this talk about the bird flu. Oh, my goodness, the bird flu. Well, killed about a couple of hundred people over since 1958, but that's all right. It might change sometime, but if it ever should change, well, with influenza, would you be benefited by having large doses of vitamin D? Let's get Dr. Cannell's ideas on this and why this vitamin is so very important. Thank you very much for being with us tonight.
You're welcome.
Why don't you just tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and then how it was that you got so interested in this, that you're really doing everything you can to educate physicians and the public about the importance of vitamin D.
Well, about 4 years ago when I was in between interest in the different projects, I started systemically reviewing non-pharmaceutical agents to see what the effect or what the literature was for any of them. And I went through one after another and was not terribly impressed. And I just kind of stumbled on vitamin D. I didn't think much of it until two things struck me. One is that this is not a vitamin. Vitamin D is not a vitamin. Vitamins are minute micro elements that are normally found in the diet. Vital, V-I-T, and M, minuscule, min. So very vital, small things found in the diet. Vitamin D is not found in the diet, unless you eat sardines for breakfast, herring for lunch, and salmon for dinner. Vitamin D was never made to be put in the mouth. It's a steroid hormone system that begins in the skin. So the fact that it was a steroid hormone makes it different from most other vitamins, which are usually either antioxidants or cofactors in enzymatic reactions. So that piqued my interest. And then the fact that really changed my mind, that really made me wonder, was that it was established knowledge, and it remains established knowledge, that if you go out in the sun in the summertime in the Monterey Bay area in your bathing suit, that in about 10 to 15 minutes, you'll make more vitamin D in your skin than exists in 200 glasses of milk. That is, to get the same amount of vitamin D as 10 or 15 minutes of summer sunshine, you'd have to drink 200 glasses of vitamin D fortified milk. This huge difference between what the natural state is, that this robust and rapid production of huge quantities of vitamin D in the skin, is very different from the recommendations by governments that have basically come along and said, well, you might want to take a little bit, and that's probably enough.
Well, you know, of course, it used to be that they used to say they get a lot of fresh air and a lot of sunshine, but unfortunately, so many of us have sedentary jobs, and we're inside most of the time, and we're not getting the sunshine. And as a result, we're not getting the vitamin D, which our skin will actually, of course, create for us. Right. And vitamin D, as you're going to learn this evening, is an essential part of health and, of course, being able to fight disease. Well, Dr. Cannell, why don't you pick up the story from there?
Well, yeah, then I started just just looking at the literature, and there was a this explosion of literature that started in around 1999 when a paper appeared by Professor Veith at the University of Toronto that debunked this idea that vitamin D was particularly toxic. I mean, I had been taught at the University of North Carolina School of Medicine that, you know, if you took two multivitamins a day, you might die from vitamin D toxicity. And nothing could be further from the truth, although you may get vitamin A toxic from taking two multivitamins, but you're not going to get vitamin D toxic. In fact, the amount of vitamin D that humans evolved in, the genome evolved in equatorial Africa where people were naked in the sunshine eating bugs and off the ground, it's clear that our forefathers and foremothers got anywhere from 5 to 10,000 units of vitamin D every day. And if you look at non-human primates and you look at their vitamin D levels and you look at people who live in the sun or work in the sun, you'll see that modern humans are truly more cavemen than cavemen were. How many people do you know that get up in the morning, get in their car in their covered garage, drive to work with glass in their car that prevents any UVB radiation from penetrating, and they park in a covered garage, they walk in, and then they go to their office where they spend the whole day, they go to a restaurant, maybe in the building, and then they repeat the whole process and come home? Well, there was no caveman that ever did that, that ever, you know, avoided the sun that much. And more than that, people, doctors will tell people to, you know, not to let a ray of sunshine strike your skin or you're going to die from cancer, which is just an ironic piece of information, because your risk of dying from cancer is hundreds of times higher if you avoid the sun than if you don't.
All right, fine. Well, certainly, a lot of what we've been told about vitamin D is terribly erroneous. I remember, Chris, when I practiced medicine, we used to give 50,000 units of vitamin D twice a week to elderly women, believing this was somehow going to make their bones stronger. They did seem to get better. I don't know whether it made their bones stronger, but we gave them, of course, along with that, calcium and certain other things. But you know, certainly vitamin D is essential, but what has really intrigued me so much about this is the relationship between vitamin D and infection. And so when we get back here, we bring other stations on board, I'd like you to sort of develop that idea, because the idea that this could have a therapeutic benefit beyond what we usually think of is so significant. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Dr. John Cannella. We're going to be talking about vitamin D, that it can be used. Now, of course, when you go to medical school, you're taught about vitamin D is important as far as absorption of calcium and bone metabolism, but that was really about all we ever talked about. And yet, vitamin D has a profound impact on much of our body's metabolism, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's a steroid hormone in which... And like all steroid hormones, like testosterone or estrogen or estradiol, all that means is that it's formed from cholesterol. It has a cholesterol structure, and it turns your genes on and off. That is, the way it works is it demasks your genome. And that's a very important fact, because that means vitamin D has as many mechanisms of actions as genes it demasks. And within the last just 18 months, three independent groups have discovered that one of the genes that vitamin D dramatically upregulates is a gene for a naturally occurring broad spectrum and very, very potent antibiotic that occurs in your lungs in particular, but also in your skin, called cathelicidin. And vitamin D just doesn't increase genetic production of it a little bit, it really, really pops it. It just really strongly upregulates it. And that led to all kinds of hypotheses that the reason that people die from infection in the wintertime instead of the summer, and that's true for many of the major infectious diseases, is that in the summertime, people have much higher levels of naturally occurring antibiotics than they do in the winter. And that has, this field is just beginning, and our group published a paper that was that is actually being released this month, in which we give evidence that influenza, in particular, is particularly sensitive to vitamin D.
Now, of course, what you're really talking about is, of course, the vitamin D actually causes the body to secrete its own antibiotics.
Yes. Yeah, these antimicrobial peptides are called, and there are hundreds of them. I think 900, the last count, 900 of them have been identified. And for the last 20 years, people have scientists have looked to see what upregulates them, what it is that makes that their blood, the genetic machinery produce them. And only in the last 18 months, the answer is at least one of the things that does it dramatically is vitamin D. And if you think about it, you know, if you think about how often you get sick, when you get infections, you often get infections in the wintertime, but influenza is virtually never occurs in the summertime, at least epidemic influenza. It's a wintertime disease. And it kills about 1 million people a year in the world from influenza-related illnesses. But there are lots of other diseases. There are very aggressive staphylococcal infections and streptococcal infections that can cause rapid and death from these gangrenous and type of infections, pneumococcal pneumonia, and all kinds of sepsis or blood infections. They're much more frequent in the winter, and there's a strong possibility that vitamin D may be a very important part, not just in preventing death from a number of infections, but potentially in helping treat it.
Well, now, is there any scientific studies or that suggest that if you're starting to come down with influenza, you ought to take some vitamin D? Has this ever been tried to see if it really is effective?
No, there are trials going on now. The paper that's going to be published this month that our group wrote is the first even suggestion in the literature that this might be the case. A direct suggestion, but there's lots of very interesting articles that support it. For example, there's perhaps 10 papers in the literature over the last 70 years showing that cod liver oil, which used to contain lots of vitamin D, that cod liver oil effectively helps prevent, doesn't totally prevent, but reduces the incidence of respiratory infections. There's also, a time in this country, you know, that most people can't remember because it occurred in the 1900s, 1910, 1920, in early 1930s, where doctors would always recommend sunshine for many infectious diseases, not just tuberculosis, but it was common treatment for a number of infectious diseases. And, of course, antibiotics took over, and that was forgotten. But it wasn't forgotten by the Russians, who studied ultraviolet radiation, artificial ultraviolet radiation, in preventing absenteeism, especially in the northern latitudes among their miners and factory workers. And there are dozens of studies in the Russian literature starting in the 40s and 50s showing that prophylactic ultraviolet radiation, which would be similar to what you could get in any suntan booth, prevented workers from getting sick in the winter and missing work. And so the combination of the cod liver oil, which contains vitamin D, and ultraviolet irradiation, which of course makes huge quantities of vitamin D in the skin, are two very suggestive pieces of evidence. What we don't have is a double-blind, placebo-controlled study showing that taking a physiological dose of vitamin D is effective in preventing influenza. But those studies are actually being designed as we speak.
Well, it's very interesting. I'm old enough to remember when my mother would give me a teaspoon or a table. I guess it was a tablespoon full of cod liver oil. Yes. If you started to come down with something. And of course, I don't know that she understood the vitamin D. She just knew that was something that mothers did for their children because it helped them to fight off infections.
Right. Yeah, it was actually a pretty standard knowledge about 60 or 70 years ago. I don't recommend cod liver oil because of the vitamin A. One thing, the vitamin D content of cod liver oil has gone way down in the last 80 years, and the vitamin A content of cod liver oil is significant. 4,000 units of preformed retinols per teaspoon, which is about 12,000 or 15,000, depending on the preparation that you get, and that's way too much vitamin A. A teaspoon of cod liver oil probably doesn't hurt anybody, but a tablespoon every day is too much.
Now, why is the vitamin D content have gone down in the fish oil and the vitamin A content has gone up? Do we have any idea?
Yeah, we don't. There are some theories about it, that vitamin D is something that's sort of recycled in the ocean, and that's the only theory that I've run across of why the vitamin D content of cod. Yeah, and that's, cod is about the only fish liver oil that's used now. They used to use halibut as well as some others that have different vitamin D and vitamin A contents, but they've apparently all gone down, and nobody is quite sure why.
All right, fine. Well, of course, the idea that this may very well help about fighting off infection, I don't think is really any outlandish at all. It's simply something that we should certainly be thinking about, and certainly vitamin D is essential towards, getting a good diet. In fact, pardon me, and of course, if you don't get vitamin D, why, you tend to get, rickets and things of that sort in children in areas where they didn't get any sunshine, and certainly they would end up with these horrible bony deformities.
Yes, and that was another clue. It's been known for a long time that children with rickets are much more likely to get pulmonary infections, lung infections. The common explanation was that rickets kind of softened the bone and made these children unable to breathe as well, and that's why they got infection. But recently there was a study out of England that showed that children with low vitamin D levels who didn't have rickets were 11 times more likely to suffer from lower respiratory infections than children who had higher vitamin D levels. Now, that's pretty strong evidence. So there's lots of pieces of evidence that when you put them all together strongly points to what just as actually common sense for anyone who's ever asked themselves, well, why do I get sick in the winter so much and I'm not sick in the summer? Why is that? And there have been a lot of theories about that. One of the most common is the indoor theory, that people are indoor more in the summertime, but in the wintertime, and that's when you transmit the disease. But actually, when you think about that, people are indoor a lot in the summertime too. You know, in factories and in cruise ships and subways and so that doesn't actually make a lot of sense. But the vitamin D theory not only makes sense, but there's a lot of evidence to support it. And what's interesting is that people used to think of vitamin D in bones, and in the last, I'd say, 7 or 8 years, the bone aspect of vitamin D is almost now insignificant, because it's been implicated by either direct or indirect scientific evidence in virtually every disease of what's called disease of civilization. There have been just thousands, literally thousands of studies about vitamin D in cancer. There are now several dozen studies about vitamin D in heart disease. There are studies about it with diabetes and multiple sclerosis and a host of autoimmune diseases. In fact, it's pretty hard to find a disease that vitamin D hasn't been implicated to some extent in. Now, that's not to say it's the sole cause of any of these diseases, nor is it to say that if you take adequate amounts of vitamin D, you won't get any of these diseases. The evidence points to an involvement vitamin D has in the etiology of some of these diseases, of all of these diseases, to some extent. Just within the last 12 hours, a paper was published from a group in the Midwest looking at Alzheimer's disease and vitamin D levels, and they found an enormous correlation. It appears that at least a certain percentage of patients with Alzheimer's disease got it because of vitamin D deficiency. Depression is another thing that has been associated with a number of studies. This study that came out a few hours ago was, again, found that patients with the lowest vitamin D level had the most problems with depression. The higher your vitamin D levels, the less likely you were to have problems with depression. And people, again, intuitively say, well, you know, I do feel pretty good in the summer. You know, I feel better in the summer than I do in the winter.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this is Dr. Cannell, and we're talking about the vitamin D and its many benefits. And what about this relationship between vitamin D and cancer? Certainly, will this help at all if you were trying to control the cancer, having gone through the regular methods of approach? But would vitamin D perhaps help as far as preventing spread of this? Do we have any idea about that?
Well, we have some clues about it. Now, the first evidence really that it may be involved in cancer came with studies about sun exposure and latitude, and finding there's a big variation in whether you would die from cancer depending upon what latitude you lived at. And more recently, there were studies about seasons of the year, and these are very important because they show that for a number of cancers and for the three major cancer killers, prostate cancer, breast cancer, colon cancer, if you're diagnosed with one of these in the summertime, your prognosis is significantly better than if you're diagnosed in the wintertime. A group from Harvard recently took it one step further. They looked at patients with lung cancer, and they looked at the group that was diagnosed in the summertime and had the highest oral vitamin D intake. And they compared those to the lung cancer patients who were diagnosed in the winter and who had the lowest vitamin D intakes. And they found that the 5-year survival rate for this group of lung cancer patients was almost 3 times better for the highest vitamin D group. Now that again doesn't prove that vitamin D would be useful in slowing the growth of cancer, but it is strongly suggestive of that. And there are multiple trials going on now trying to address that very question you asked. But to me, the question is not really the proper one. Whether vitamin D helps slow the growth of cancer, that is, whether it's effective treatment. The real question is, if you have cancer, should you fight it vitamin D deficient? Should cancer patients die vitamin D deficient? That's the question to me.
In other words, basically what you're suggesting is you've got nothing to lose by taking substantial doses of it, and it's possible that it might help.
That's exactly true. And it is actually one of the most potent and anti-carcinogenic substances have ever been identified. That we've known that, the science has known that for almost 25 years. We just haven't found a way to put it to use until these more recent studies have come out. But that's right. The real question is, if you're dying from cancer, do you want to die vitamin D deficient? And if you're a doctor caring for a patient, should you let your cancer patient die vitamin D deficient? And that, to me, the answer to that question is no, you shouldn't.
And of course, if some studies do suggest a threefold increase in lifespan, well, that's pretty significant dealing with cancer.
Oh, it's enormous. But again, that's different from the gold standard in which half the patients are given vitamin D and half the patients are given sugar pills, and you see who lives longest. But I can tell you, knowing what's in the literature now, if I had cancer, I would not be in the sugar pill group.
Right, fine. Well, perhaps we could talk a little bit about the relationship. Is there any definite relationship to diabetes?
Well, the relationship with diabetes is strong, but it may be more preventive than in treatment.
Hold that thought right there for a moment, please. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we were simply talking about with Dr. Cannell about the relationship of cancer and vitamin D. And he's simply pointing out that there is no definite double-blind control studies. However, they did find that, I think it was an English study, where they actually took those people who got their cancer in the summer and had very high vitamin D levels, and compared them with those who got the cancer in the wintertime and low vitamin D levels, and over a several-year period, certainly those with the high vitamin D levels lived about 3 times as long as the others. It doesn't prove anything, but it's certainly suggestive that vitamin D could be playing a part in helping to fight cancer, not curative at all, and more studies need to be done. But it's an intriguing thought. And then we were beginning to talk about the relationship between vitamin D and diabetes. So pick that thought up, please.
Sure. Probably the first study was about 10 years ago when there was some Finnish researchers looked at the children who were given large amounts of vitamin D when they were children in Finland. After World War II, for various reasons, children were all given 2,000 units of vitamin D a day when they were growing up, which a lot of people think would think is a toxic amount, but it is not. That was standard treatment in Finland for many years. And what they did is they just followed those children who were given 2,000 units of vitamin D a day when they were grown to see what happened to them as they got older. And one of the strongest associations they found, one among many, was that the children who had been given large amounts of vitamin D when they were growing up had about 10 times less likely to develop insulin-dependent diabetes. And this got people looking, and more recently there have been multiple studies now showing associations with your vitamin D level and your blood sugar. Basically, the higher your vitamin D level, the lower your blood sugar. They have also done studies looking at things called vitamin D receptor polymorphisms, which are genetic variations in the vitamin D receptor, and that's a way of finding what diseases might be associated with this steroid hormone. And so there's, but again, most of the evidence with diabetes looks like it's preventative and not curative. My own personal experience in treating patients is that very few diabetics that vitamin D, cures their diabetes, but certainly with insulin-dependent diabetics, it becomes much easier to control it. It's been known for a long time that vitamin D increases insulin sensitivity and increases production of insulin in the pancreas. Of course, with insulin-dependent diabetics, some of them don't have any pancreatic cells left, and so it's not going to help them.
How about the type 2 diabetes?
Yes, there's more evidence that it may be helpful in that condition. There are a number of studies now that show patients with type 2 diabetes are much more likely to be vitamin D deficient. Patients with type 2 diabetes, their blood sugars are inversely correlated with 25-OHD levels. And there are some studies showing that when you give vitamin D to patients with diabetes, their blood sugars go down and their insulin secretion increases.
All right, so that really it may then at least be an adjunct to a proper diabetic care. Would that be a fair statement?
Well, again, the question with diabetes is people can ask, well, should you take diabetes, should you take vitamin D to treat your diabetes? And the question is similar with the cancer one. If you have diabetes, should diabetic patients be, fight their disease vitamin D deficient? If you're a doctor, should your diabetic patients be vitamin D deficient? That's the question. And like with cancer or like with any other disease, the answer is no, they shouldn't be. Huh. And the doctors, unfortunately, are some of the main causes of vitamin D deficiency. Because of this hysteria about sunlight that swept over this country in the last 20 years, the doctors are the ones that are causing patients to be vitamin D deficient. And whenever a doctor says, stay out of the sun, the doctor is saying, become vitamin D deficient. If you consciously avoid the sun and drink milk 3 times a day and take a multivitamin pill with vitamin D in it, but if you totally stay out of the sun, you will always be vitamin D deficient. 100% of people who totally avoid the sun but drink milk 3 times a day and take a multivitamin, 100% of those people will be vitamin D deficient. So you can see whenever doctors tell people to stay out of the sun without taking steps to assure vitamin D adequacy, doctors are the main cause of vitamin D deficiency.
And then, of course, there's this intense fear of vitamin D toxicity. And this was sort of drummed in you in medical school, but you had to take, 50,000 units a day for, 6 months at a time before you, at least before you started getting the signs of vitamin D toxicity. I don't think I ever saw anybody with vitamin D toxicity, although I sure know all of its symptoms.
Yes.
Thank you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, Dr. John Cannell of the Vitamin D Council. And I think of the next break where I will let you get the information out as far as the Vitamin D Council is concerned. What about the relationship between vitamin D and heart disease?
Well, just 9 days ago now, a group from Italy did an interesting study. They measured carotid artery enamel thickness, you know, with ultrasound, which is a standard measurement of atherosclerosis. And they took a large group of patients and simply tried to correlate the vitamin D levels with the how much plaque was in their carotid artery. And there was a very, very strong inverse correlation between 25 OHD levels and the amount of plaque, to the point where the authors said that vitamin D was a strong and independent risk factor for heart disease. The first studies were studies of latitude, noting that heart disease is more common the more further north you go or the further south you go, depending upon whether you're north or south of the equator. So there's latitudinal gradient to heart disease. Second thing is that heart disease, actually many more people die in the winter from a heart attack than the summer, so there's this seasonal variation. Whenever you see a disease that has a latitudinal variation and a seasonal variation, the first thing one should think of is that there's a vitamin D component to that disease. Since those seasonal and latitudinal studies, then there's actually been a study that simply correlated 25 OHD levels with risk of heart attack, finding an inverse correlation. But again, what's lacking is there's not been a double-blind, placebo-controlled interventional trial giving one group of patients adequate amounts of vitamin D and the other group a sugar pill to see if it prevents people from dying from heart disease. And those studies will take decades to occur. But again, the question is, if you have heart disease, do you want to fight your heart disease vitamin D deficient, or do you want to fight your heart disease vitamin D replete?
All right, fine. Well, we're going to be back in just a moment with Dr. John Cannell, and certainly they have a lot of fascinating information through the Vitamin D Council, information I think that everybody should have and they should think about. And these are things that the average doctor, and not to criticize the average doctor, he's doing the best he can, but he doesn't have the time to zero in on this. And these are not the things that are going to be discussed at medical meetings or in medical magazines, or at least the medical magazines he's reading. This is why you need to get educated and educated him. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Dr. John Cannell. If you have a question, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Dr. Cannell, do you have a website, someplace people could go to get more information on this subject?
Yes, you can just Google the Vitamin D Council, and you'll come up to our website. And we have try to maintain it with the latest information, although since I'm the person who supplies the content, it's not as current as I'd like it to be. But we do have a good webmaster, and there's lots of if you go to the news section there, you can read lots of the latest articles in magazines. So, for example, Science News had a big article about the antibiotic effects of vitamin D, and the Baltimore Sun had a wonderful article just a couple of days ago. And the webmaster, Dana Clark, is really good at getting all the latest lay information. And that's useful. And you can learn more about the toxicity of vitamin D, which we haven't had time to talk about. But like you said, most physicians don't know what you know, and that's that to get vitamin D toxic, you'd have to take 50,000 units of vitamin D every day for many, many months or even years, actually. And even then, what happens is you develop asymptomatic hypercalcemia. That's all that happens. And if you have hypercalcemia for long enough, then that will cause your internal organs to calcify. So, but that takes years and years and years. So vitamin D toxicity is it's just a red herring. One of the things I do when I speak is I take an entire bottle of vitamin D before the audience. I down it all 100 pills with a glass of water, and That's very effective because some of the people are convinced I'm going to drop dead before I finish my talk.
Well, now you were mentioning something about multiple sclerosis.
Yeah, you know, multiple sclerosis, it's long been known, multiple sclerosis basically doesn't exist around the equator. And nobody knew why, and there's this strong latitudinal gradient to it, and nobody knew why that was the case. The further, you know, the further you are from the equator, the higher your risk of multiple sclerosis. Recently, there's also been found to be some seasonal variation in the lesions that you can identify on an MRI scan. They're worse in the winter than they are in the summer. So again, those two clues that vitamin D is involved in the etiology of multiple sclerosis. There, it looks like it's preventative. There's, again, some Norwegian evidence that the children who took a lot of vitamin D when they were younger have a much lower risk of multiple sclerosis. But people who do have multiple sclerosis, it appears to help prevent further lesions if you have to take enough of it, though. Some of the multiple sclerosis patients and some of the ongoing studies are taking up to 25,000 units a day. This is as part of a study to see if it helps prevent exacerbations of the disease.
What does it seem to have, at least, or do we have any idea yet how the studies are going?
What it looks like, talking to the author, is that and they had to stop that. Terminated the blind portion of it because they could see an effect. Well, it doesn't reverse the disease. And there doesn't seem to be a lot of benefit from taking 25 or 30,000 units. Just the amount of vitamin D that you would get if you lived around the equator and you went out in the sun every day is as effective as any, and that's about 5 or 10,000 units a day. So if I had multiple sclerosis, I'd take 10,000 units of vitamin D3, cholecalciferol, every day.
Well, now, one of the things that we see a fair amount of, in other words, I don't see patients anymore, but I talk to a lot of people, and these are the people with this chronic fatigue type of syndrome. Is there any evidence that these people with these chronic infections, whether it be based upon mycoplasm or whether it be the chlamydia or Epstein-Barr, things of that sort, would they benefit from vitamin D, do you think?
Well, there are no studies that indicate that they do, but that's I'm sure you can remember, that's a very difficult group of patients to treat. There is some evidence that some of these patients with myalgia, chronic myalgia or a chronic fatigue syndrome or chronic pain syndrome actually are suffering from the adult form of rickets. One of the ways that a physician can test for that is look for periosteal bone pain, either over the sternum or over the tibia. And patients who have osteomalacia, it's a painful disease, this adult form of rickets. And if you just touch the periosteum over the tibia or over the sternum, they jump because it's so painful. And that should be a clue to get a vitamin D level. But again, if you have one of these diseases, the old question is should you have it and be vitamin D deficient, or should you have it and be vitamin D replete? Other than the patients who have osteomalacia, I know of no evidence that patients with chronic fatigue are going to get better with vitamin D, but they're not going to get any worse, and some of them probably will get better.
All right, let's go ahead. We have a Ben calling in from New York. Hi, Ben. Did you have a question for our guest?
Yes, doctor. I am a person that suffers very much during the winter because of vitamin D deficiency, and I become a lot depressed, like you've been saying just a few minutes ago.
Yes.
The way that I was fighting this was every winter I had to leave the country to go to a warm climate. But, you know, you become tired of doing the same thing all over. My question is, what do you think or how could I get my vitamin D during the winter months? Because the minute that I leave the country, within less than 24 hours that I go overseas, I'm a different person.
In other words, are you going to an area where there's lots of sunshine?
Yes.
All right.
I need a lot of sunshine.
Yeah. Well, those, that immediate effect is probably from the sunlight hitting your retina, and there's a definite and fairly rapid antidepressant effect of direct and intense bright light. The light boxes that you can buy are somewhat useful, but you have to remember how much more, how many more lux are out in a bright sunny day. It's a 10 to 20 times brighter in a bright sunny day than even if you have your face within 5 or 10 inches of one of those light boxes. So that immediate effect that you feel is probably from the sunlight's effect on your direct effect on your brain through your retina and then through your pineal gland. But the secondary effect, now there are a number of studies that actually show that there are some patients who have depression in the wintertime who can be effectively treated with vitamin D. I have treated, by training now, I'm a practicing psychiatrist, and I have a number of patients who clearly were depressed every winter for many, many years, and they were misdiagnosed with seasonal affective disorder when, in fact, what they had was seasonal vitamin D deficiency.
Right. Doctor, two quick points before
sure.
I let you go. I was put on 50,000, I think it's international units, that's what it is, but I was having a hard time getting it
at
my pharmacist.
Yeah.
Also, yes, doctor.
Yeah. The 50,000 unit prescription vitamin D is actually ergocalciferol vitamin D3 and D2, and it's not really vitamin D3. You can get, I wouldn't take a 50,000 unit capsule of vitamin D unless you really know what you're doing, but a 50,000 unit capsule of vitamin D is a medicine. It is not a supplement.
Okay.
You would certainly need no more than 5,000 units of vitamin D every day in the wintertime. If you're in New York, you should take 5,000 units of vitamin D every day from probably early October through March or April. Now Costco and many pharmacies now sell 1,000 unit capsules of vitamin D, and so just take 5 of those. Or you can go on the internet, and there's a couple of places: Life Extension Foundation and Biotech Pharmacal, which sell 5,000 unit capsules. The only place that I know in the world that makes 50,000 unit capsules of cholecalciferol vitamin D3 is Biotech Pharmacal. You can search for that on the internet. But again, 50,000 unit capsules of vitamin D are medicine. If you don't know what you're doing, you can die from it.
Yeah, and that's the way that I don't want to go with the medication, doctor, because right now I was placed on amitriptyline, and I feel I have some side effects.
Yeah.
I blow up, my face blows up, and things like that. And doctor, the second point was, you know, I don't know if you're aware that insurance companies still do not want to recognize the effectiveness of the light therapy.
Yeah.
How is that in the works? Do you have any idea?
I'm sorry, I have no idea.
And the thing is that sometimes you're just going to have to ignore the insurance company and do what's best for your health, Ben. But anyway, I thank you so much for your call.
Thank you.
I think it's fascinating, of course, the idea that, you know, in the wintertime you really have all the problems, you get into a sunny environment and you feel so much better. And I think that is simply reinforcing what Dr. Kandel's been saying. God bless, and thanks very much for your call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Okay, and again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And we have Jack calling from Michigan. Jack, do you have a question on this subject?
Yes, doctor. Ergocalciferol D2 versus cholecalciferol D3. Wondering whether the D2 is essentially worthless in terms of bioactivity versus D3.
All right, let's get that answered. What's the difference between the two of them, and why do you make the distinction, Dr. Cannell?
Well, it appears from the most recent study that vitamin D3, cholecalciferol, that's the substance made in the skin from sunlight, that cholecalciferol vitamin D3 is about 10 times more biologically active than vitamin D2. Vitamin D2 is obtained from yeast, from irradiating yeast. It's an artificial product. It doesn't occur in the human naturally. It's not vitamin D, and it should never be taken.
Doctor, I need to tell you something. A loved one is in end-stage renal failure, and Ergol D2 is the only one they inject at dialysis 3 days a week, and when I present the D3 to them, they just dismiss it as so much nonsense.
I know.
All right, Jack, you're going to have to just, learn more about it, and you're going to have to be responsible for your own health and the health of your family. But God bless. Thanks very much for calling. Anything else, Jack?
Oh, that's it, Doctor.
All right, bye-bye. All right, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or 464-8295. Our guest is Dr. John Cannell from the Vitamin Council. And you can Google in Vitamin Council on your computer, and then you'll come to their website, and you'll learn so much here. I know that certainly I've learned a great deal, but then it's a constant process of learning. There's so much out there in the way of natural remedies that we need to know, and this certainly can hopefully keep us from getting ill and having some very, very real complications. Are there any other major fields that where the vitamin D really would be beneficial, things we should be thinking about?
Well, there are a certain percentage of patients with hypertension whose hypertension will totally disappear when their vitamin D deficiency is treated. It's not known exactly what percentage it is, but vitamin D deficiency is one cause of hypertension and totally treatable. A number of autoimmune diseases we haven't talked about, and there it's a little more complicated. Every study that's been done has shown that patients with autoimmune disease, whether it's lupus or whether it's fibromyalgia or whether it's autoimmune bowel disease, they have very low vitamin D levels. The question is, what happens when you treat those patients? And those studies are occurring now. You know, it's easy, I would think, as a listener. If I was listening to this and I didn't know anything about vitamin D, I'd say, well, this Dr. Cannell, I mean, he's saying this is a panacea. I mean, he's saying this is a cure-all. And I'd like to stress again that it's unlikely that there's any of the diseases I'd mention are totally caused from vitamin D. And what I'm saying is that vitamin D has a role in them. But the fact is that although vitamin D is not a panacea, I believe vitamin D is the closest thing to a panacea that anybody who's listening to me right now will ever find. It is unique. It's a steroid hormone, and the amounts that you've been getting in your diet from the milk or your vitamin pills are about one-tenth of what you would be getting if you were out in the sun. And it has profound effects on your genes when you take the proper amount. I can't tell you how many people who take it. They either take 2,000 or 3,000, maybe 5,000 units in the wintertime, and then they take less or none in the summer, depending upon the latitude they live at and their sun exposure. How much better they feel, how much stronger, how much cognitively clearer. In fact, one thing we haven't talked about that is going to come out in the next several months is the relationship of vitamin D to athletic performance. There are a number of interesting studies, in the Russian and also the German literature. Do you remember the time when the Russians and the Germans won every Olympics?
I sure do.
Yeah,
and back there,
every year. They were one or two or two and one. I mean, they won. Well, I thought about that, and I went back in the literature because of this Russian history of radiating their miners and their factory workers to prevent, absenteeism in the winter. I looked in the same literature for any evidence that they were irradiating their athletes, and lo and behold, in the Russian and German literature, starting again in the 40s and the 50s, there is a significant literature showing that when you take athletes and you irradiate half of them and compare them to the ones that are not irradiated, there are significant improvements in speed, balance, choice reaction time, reflexes, etc. And I've become convinced that one of the reasons that the Germans and the East Germans and the Russians were number one and two in the Olympics for so many years is because their athletes were about the only ones that weren't vitamin D deficient. And if you look at the fields that they really specialized in, they were indoor sports. So you would not expect, for example, long-distance runners to be helped any by vitamin D because they're outside all the time and their vitamin D levels are good. But if you look at the indoor sports, that's where the American athletes would almost all be vitamin D deficient. If you think about gymnasts, they're going to all be vitamin D deficient. The same with basketball players. So I believe that one of the reasons that the Russians and East Germans won is because they were irradiating their athletes.
Are they still doing it? Do we know?
I don't know. The literature sort of ended in the 80s, so I don't know.
Well, I think that maybe we ought to get to think about doing it for our athletes, but certainly this is not done in this country at all, is it?
No. There are a few very small studies in this that were sort of ignored. But the other thing we haven't talked about is race and vitamin D deficiency.
All right, well, why don't we just cover that? We've got about 3 more minutes after the music stops. And, of course, I know that people with dark skin certainly have much more of a tendency to be vitamin D deficient than people with light skin. But we'll be right back. Well, Dr. Cannell, why don't you just pick up this idea of the race? Because really, if you have very dark skin, you don't create the vitamin D as well, do you?
Yeah. No, and there's this resurgence of rickets, disease of basically of the Middle Ages that's now back, and it's basically a disease of inner-city African-American children, and it's because of vitamin D deficiency. But the more melanin that you have in the skin, the more likely you're to get vitamin D deficient. And so I think it's ironic that here's a disease, vitamin D deficiency, that's much more common among African Americans. The one food that African Americans, many African Americans, can eat or can drink is milk because of lactose intolerance. So what food does the United States government choose to supplement with vitamin D? Milk. Now, does that make any sense? Not that it's a conspiracy. It's not a conspiracy. It's just ignorance. But I think it's sort of tragic that vitamin D deficiency occurs in virtually 100% of African Americans, at least in the wintertime. And milk is the food that the government chooses to use to help supplement vitamin D in the diet, and that's the one food African Americans can't drink.
Well, of course, the other thing is, of course, that adults, if they don't get enough vitamin D, will tend to get osteomalacia, won't they?
Yes, osteomalacia is the adult form of rickets, and it's a painful disease. Yeah, many old people have osteomalacia that goes undiagnosed, and it's called the aches and pains of growing old, when in fact they're osteomalotic.
Well, do you think that people who are certainly have Alzheimer's disease would at least do you think they would benefit, or at least, or would you use that same analogy? Would you probably at least would be a good idea to have adequate vitamin D?
Yeah, knowing the pathology of Alzheimer's disease, I don't think that patients are going to get better with vitamin D treatment. But I think there's reason to think some of them might not get any worse.
How about schizophrenia? Any benefit at all there?
As a psychiatrist, I had a lot of hopes for that. And again, with schizophrenia, there's a significant literature that shows it may have a role in prevention. But I've treated thousands, actually, of patients with schizophrenia, treated their vitamin D levels and got their levels up good, and it did not, it really has not helped the schizophrenia.
All right, we're out of time, but God bless you. Thanks very much, and hope we can get you back on some of our other programs later on. But it's been a real pleasure for myself, and I'm sure for our listening audience.
My pleasure. Good night.
God bless. Thanks so much. All right, well, that's Dr. John Cannell. I hope you've enjoyed our conversation with him. Fascinating information, important. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course we try to give you a variation of programs, and we try to, of course, emphasize the importance of health. We have a very, very important DVD. It's my interviews with Dr. Russell Blaylock on health and nutrition. I should say nutrition and behavior is the title. Nutrition and behavior. Let me suggest that you order this and you listen to it several times, because there's a very definite relationship between proper nutrition and behavior, and they found a very definite relationship even between proper nutrition and addiction and criminal activity. In fact, in some of the prisons where they had proper nutrition, the incidence of people going off, coming back to prison after they've been released was, you know, the difference between 15% and 85%. We've got Luke calling from Idaho, but I'm afraid that we're out of Iowa. I'll be glad to talk to him after the program, Luke, but right now we'll have to wrap up this program. If you'd like to get the DVD, A Nutrition and Behavior, it's available by calling 1-800-544-8927. We, of course, carry the book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life by Dr. Blaylock. We have his other books on natural strategies for cancer patients. If you know anybody who's going to go in and get their chemotherapy or radiation, you need to get this book for them, because if they follow through the routine, their hair isn't going to fall out, they're not going to get deathly ill, and if they're going to take the chemotherapy, why, this is what the information you need to know. And then, of course, we have Dr. Blaylock's third book entitled Excitotoxins, The Taste That Kills, because they really are poisoning our children and us with MSG and with aspartame, which is NutraSweet, which isn't so much you're going to be eating. So those three books, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life, Excitotoxins, The Taste That Kills, and Natural Strategies for Cancer Patients. We have a very important book on magnesium, The Miracle of Magnesium, and you really need to know about the importance of magnesium in the diet, and you really need to be taking supplementary magnesium. And then, of course, we have a book on statin drugs, and we have a four-tape set on statin drugs. You need to have this information so that you can begin looking after yourself and about your family. There's so much that you need to know about what's going on. Let me simply mention, we do carry the Berkey products, and if you need a big Berkey or Berkey Light, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. I believe we're moving into very, very difficult times, whether it's a matter of weeks, months, or maybe years. You should begin making preparations to look after your family, and you need a water supply, and this is where a big Berkey or the Berkey Light are so important. Of course, we do carry the Berkey Sport bottles and the other Berkey products. And then, of course, I would simply point out that we carry health products. If you're interested in knowing what my wife and I take, and we do take a lot of vitamins and minerals, but I'm pushing 78. I'll be 78 in February, and I'm doing fairly well. And so I really believe, of course, the medicines we take really are, I shouldn't say medicines, I should say the supplements. I believe that these contribute to the health. And when I see some of my contemporaries, my age, practiced with me for many years, well, they're getting to be pretty old men. And I'm just saying that health products will keep you from getting old, but you really do need them to maintain your health and to keep your immune system primed and to keep your mind alert. Anyway, if you'd like to get our health catalog, the other thing is, of course, many of you should be laying in the supplies you'll need. If we have a breakdown of our society, the government's planning on it. All you need to do is read the Military Commission Act and the John Warner National Defense Appropriations Act. They're planning on having martial law in America. In fact, even Senator Patrick Leahy said that these acts are an invitation. They encourage the president to declare martial law. You need to begin looking after yourself. If you'd like to get the food catalog for long-term storage food, well, we'd be glad to provide you one. Hopefully you'll want to get it. Lay in a supply, but don't put these things off. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Please pray for Radio Liberty.